Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Room 42. I'm Liz Fraley from Single Sourcing Solutions, and I'm your moderator. This is Janice Summers, our interviewer, and welcome to Chris Daly, today's guest on Room 42. Chris is an assistant professor of English and director of the Master of Arts in Technical Communication program at Texas State University. He's got over 13 years of professional experience in higher ed, and his scholarly work has been in Technical Communication Quarterly, Programmatic Perspectives, and other journals. His research focuses on issues of social justice with a specific emphasis on diversity and inclusion in technical communication and professional communication academic programs. Today, he's here to help us start answering the question, how does diversity in the field affect the profession? Help TechCom as a profession. And that's the last part of it.
We're here to talk about diversity in our field. Boom.
Right.
So welcome, Chris. Very, very excited to have you here. And I'm really thrilled to hear your perspective on this topic. I think it's an important topic that I know almost everybody that I've ever talked to in the field is super interested in and wants more diversity. Where are we at right now? You're coming from academia. So how does it look right now as far as diversity? How are we doing?
So, as a field as a whole, mm-hmm. we're talking about just, are we diverse? I mean, not really. So, you know, in some places more than others. Mm-hmm. But this idea of diversity and talking about diversity and trying to increase diversity and inclusion as well, this discussion is still relatively new, you know. Mm-hmm. For a long, long time, technical communication was considered just a very formulaic, pragmatic type of discipline, you know.
Right.
And, you know, looking at the history of it, you know, we're thinking about, okay, this is just very objective type writing. Mm-hmm. And as technical communicators started thinking about, okay, this is actually more humanistic, you know, the rich rhetoric comes into play sometimes in technical communication. Mm-hmm. Ideas started to form and change. And now we're starting to talk about, okay, how do we think of technical communication in terms of diversity and inclusion? Mm-hmm. And honestly, one of the best things about technical communication in my mind is that it's a really good place for these kind of issues, for social justice, diversity, and things like that. Because as technical communicators, we're always thinking about our end users, right? Our audience.
Yeah.
So we're always thinking about, we empathize with people, really.
Right, right.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just saying, right. I was agreeing with you.
Yeah. And I think that's so awesome. Like, we think about, okay, what's the user situation? How might they think differently? And then we design solutions for that. We design communication for that. So when we're addressing issues of discrimination and exclusion, you know, you have to think from another person's point of view. And I think that's really key, right? So we were talking about earlier before we started the broadcast, you know, how as technical communicators, we'll be in a situation where we're trained to listen first, right? Mm-hmm. Listen to that subject matter expert, fully understand what they're saying, process it, ask clarifying questions, and then we take action. That's right. You all taught me that. And that's, you know, so to me, that's why technical communication is such a great place for this. So now that we've started really talking about these issues and taking them seriously, I mean, I think technical communicators can really contribute in a big way to issues of diversity and inclusion.
I agree with you, because, you know, it's funny because it comes to that old question when you ask people who are not in the discipline, well, what do tech writers do? Right. I run into this with other people that aren't in this sphere. And I'm like, well, have you ever read instructions? Have you ever had a manual? Like, oh yeah, I've had that. Okay. There's a technical writer behind all of this. And now you add in professional writers, and they touch every aspect and so many aspects of our lives, in professional lives and in our personal lives, they interact with us. And you brought up another good point in that the evolution of the field went from just this archaic view, very stagnant, to now you're infusing psychology, sociology, all the humanistic studies into a technical writer. It touches everything.
Yeah. And technical communicators have power, you know, and I don't know that people think about that a lot, but when you create documents and things, you know, you're influencing people.
Right.
You know? It's an incredibly influential field that people often don't think about.
Right. It's that subtle energy that's in the background that is just quiet and persistent.
Yeah, exactly.
So now how long have we been talking about diversity? It's fairly recent, which is, I think it's fantastic that we're starting to focus on that. But how long would you say that's been?
So in academia, the earliest mentions that we get about diversity and inclusion come probably from the early, you know, 2007, 8 or so, people start talking about it in conferences. Mm-hmm. And then around 2011, you start to get published research papers talking about diversity in the field. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's a long time ago now, like more than a decade. But in terms of, you know, research and talking about a subject, it's not very long. And then only in the past five-ish or so years has it really, at least in my sphere, started to take off and become a legitimate, like, we're starting to have people that'll join academic departments and their research field is social justice or diversity and inclusion as a research field. So just the past few years, has that even been really could you even really go on the academic job market and say, I research diversity and inclusion in technical communication?
That's I think, a very admirable evolution. And now how is it that, how do we change what we're doing? How do you change what you're doing in academia to become more diverse and more inclusive?
Yeah, so
doesn't it start there? I think that's one of the things you were telling me is, like, you know, if we want more diversity and inclusion out there in the workforce for professionals, we have to kind of start at academia too. You know, we have to mind our own house and be more diverse and inclusive at this level. How do you do that?
Yeah, because so almost all of you out there have a college degree, you know, mm-hmm. And one of the things about higher education really is that higher education is built on exclusion. So, I mean, originally it was built just for rich white guys. That was the original group of people that were in colleges and universities. But, you know, colleges evolved and the point of having research universities is, you know, new ideas and new thought. But some of these old systems remained in place. So even as we, even as colleges and universities have evolved to say now they're very interested in inclusion, right? Well, they're interested in diversity mainly. So I should say that there's a difference, you know, diversity just means people from different backgrounds. And so, but what we're seeing in higher education is that the gap is starting to close for number of students, say people of color, entering into higher education institutions. But that gap closing, with that gap closing, what we're seeing is that much fewer of them end up graduating. So the gap, the persistence gap is wide. Mm-hmm. And what we think is happening, you know, has to do with inclusion. When we're talking about
stop at diversity.
Yeah, right, exactly. So like colleges and universities, think about diversity in their communication all the time. We see it constantly. So when you look at a college recruitment brochure, you have the thing where what they say in higher ed marketing, they'll say three in a tree, right? So you have three diverse faces and some campus greenery in the background, you know, but you'll show these images of diverse students.
Right.
It does a couple of things. First of all, it's PR, right? It shows that we are interested in diversity.
Right.
And so that's, you know, for the public. And then also, I think most colleges hope that it will help attract a diverse group of applicants.
Right. Because if I can see myself in the picture, then I feel like I could achieve something there. That's a common phenomena. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's so much more complicated because if I'm a prospective student and I'm Black and I see on this brochure, oh, there's Black people at this school. And then mm-hmm. I show up and all of a sudden I'm like, where are the Black people? Right. And then that person becomes the person on the front of the brochure, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So it becomes this hard ethical question of, is it okay to show diversity because we're trying to attract a more diverse group of students, even if it misrepresents, you know, that's kind of a technical communication ethical question. If we're, you know, even if we're misrepresenting how much diversity is at the university, is it okay because ultimately we're helping these people, mm-hmm. you know, or ultimately we're trying to meet the mission statement of the university. So yeah, it's a big question. Sorry, I got a little off topic.
No, it's a good one.
It is a good one because what do you do? It's the chicken and the egg.
Yeah. Yes. Right? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Well, one of the things that solidified it for me, like in a way that it hadn't before, was someone was telling me about hiring practices on offshore oil platforms. And they hire in a cluster because if you're the only woman on the platform, you can't go to anyone and say, hey, you got a tampon, right? You're the only one there. So there is a sense to, you can't just have one, right? You need to have, inclusion means having a community people can go into also.
Yeah. 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 And so that's one issue when we're thinking about how we're communicating with people, you know, how much are we thinking about how honest we're being with that? But like units, so I guess I kind of want to go back a little bit to universities and this idea of exclusion, because yeah. a university gets prestige from excluding as many people as possible. So if you're Harvard, you're going to say, we only accepted 7% of our applications. Aren't we incredible? You know, mm-hmm. but the idea of a merit-based admissions process where you're looking at a student holistically, that comes from the idea of higher education had that idea back when they were trying to exclude Jewish people. They were trying to say, like, we're trying to keep people out. So we're going to have merit-based admissions so that we don't have an objective admissions process. But now we do merit-based admissions based on the idea that we're trying to be totally, you know, we're trying to be as objective as possible and include as many people as possible. But what do we look at when we try and bring someone in through a merit-based admissions process? You know, well, they need to have extracurricular activities, or they need to score a certain number on a standardized test, or they need to take all AP courses or all these different things. And a lot of those things exclude people that are not from, you know, the traditional middle and upper class white background.
Yeah, I was going to say, what does metric mean? What does merit-based mean when it starts from a position of inequality or inequity, right? When you don't have time to be able to do 18 different extracurriculars and do AP classes because they're not offered to your school.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, and so then when that happens, the admissions offices are the ones that bring in the students. And then the tech comm program just kind of has to get what we get. So when you're at a university and you're trying to get, and you're a technical communication program, and you're trying to get more diverse students, you're at the mercy of that admissions office. But where I think technical communicators could really be valuable in this process is we can start talking to and working with admissions offices from the point of view of technical and professional communication. And we can say, hey, look, the way that you're communicating with students and your process for doing this could be better. You know, you're not mm-hmm. thinking about your end user. You're thinking about what everyone's always done forever, or you're thinking about the institutional mission or things like that.
So one of the ways to make improvements, because you have to start with that diversity, right? Is to be involved as a department, to be involved in the recruitment process in that very first aspect of how you promote and recruit people in and receive applicants. So if you're involved in that, then you can make a change on how they accept a more diverse audience that would be interested in your department, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yes,
so, absolutely. So in the commercial world, recruiting is also the same thing. It's mm-hmm. exclusionary, right? So I think that directly translates to people who are trying to staff or hire a diverse group, is they need to be involved with their marketing department and their human resources department, and they need to help shape how recruitment is done so that it attracts diverse people. And I think in the commercial world, you have even more influence in that recruitment process, because recruiters like to fill the jobs that you need. So mm-hmm. I think what you're saying should resonate really clear with anyone who's out there in the world as a practitioner right now and trying to hire and recruit. It's the same thing. So go on. I just wanted to make that leap for people so they understood this is, you know, because yeah, I've been in that department. The commercial world, in the recruitment department. So I can tell you, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, and I don't know if this also translates, but one thing in higher education is that probably a lot of you can relate to, people don't come to the university saying, I'm going to study technical communication. Like I'll probably almost all of you fell into it somehow by accident, just like me.
Yes.
And so, so we're constantly trying to go into English classes and say, hey, you want to actually make money when you graduate, or trying to go into like science classes and be like, hey, you hate math, but like science,
right? Come to our department. Yeah. You'll have a home.
But
exposure is part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So as we start working with the recruiters, you know, and start saying, hey, check out the cool, great opportunities over here in our department. Cause I worked as an admission counselor for a few years. That was my first job in higher ed. Mm-hmm. Lots of times people would come into my office and be like, I don't know what to do.
I don't know what to do.
I'd be like, what are you interested in? And if someone was like, I really like writing, you know, and I'm interested in science and stuff like that. And I would never have said, hey, technical writing, because I didn't know what it was.
This is a really cool field.
But we can start doing that, you know?
Yeah.
I went into when I came to Texas State, I went into our admissions office and I said, hey, can I take a tour of the campus? Yeah, great. And I talked to the recruiter and the staff and I was like, hey, this is what I do. This is my department. You know, send people to me. I'd love to talk to them. And hopefully we'll get more people in the field that way. But yeah. Uh-huh. But I think when we're talking about recruiting and bringing in a diverse group of people, uh-huh. one of the most important things is having diverse voices in our decision-making processes.
Yeah.
So
that's, I think, that second step is so now you've been successful. You've got some diverse people. Now you have to include them, right? That's the inclusionary part, is you can't just stop at diversity. You have to look at inclusion. So go on. That was
yeah, exactly. So, you know, t- talking to people and asking them, you know, what they think, what we should be doing, and including them in the way we make decisions is such an important thing. And one of the hardest things to do is to not try and bring people in and sort of normalize them or sort of get them into the mainstream. So one of the things that we do in academia really well, but it's a problem, is that people will come in and we'll say, this is how you do the thing, you know,
right.
This is how you do class. This is how you write. This is how you create this specific type of document or genre. Mm-hmm. And then we don't, and when someone doesn't do it that way, then we correct them. And that's kind of how we grade. And not that that's totally wrong, because you have to know how to write a proposal, you know.
Right.
There's certain conventions and stuff like that. But I think that there's also room to bring in other ideas. So like an example would be, there's another professor who I know, her name is Temptatious McCoy, and she's at Bowie State University. I think I've talked to you all about her before, but she, when she was writing her dissertation, you know, she asked, well, can I do a digital chapter? And they were like, I don't know. And they let her do a digital chapter for her dissertation. And then a lot of her dissertation, not all, but a big part of it, is written in African-American vernacular English. And so when you read it, you know, her dissertation is about, you know, ways that, it's about something called trap karaoke, but it's a very like, you should look it up when you all have a chance, because I'm not going to do it justice if I try and explain it.
So we'll look up the definition of trap karaoke later.
Trap karaoke, but it, you know, and the way that's a form of communication, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the use of African American vernacular English and then the use of a digital chapter makes it, you know, so much better. It really conveys, you know, what that is, what trap karaoke is, the culture around it, how it works. And her committee, I was so impressed with them, because they let her do it that way instead of saying that's not what a dissertation is, or instead of saying, you know what, you know, if you want to be taken seriously, you're going to need to write your dissertation this way. And they said, you know what, let's try it out. Let's do it this different way. And it, you know, it was, of course, just as rigorous and has just as much theoretical foundation, everything you need in a dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
But it was done, you know, with inclusion in mind, which I thought was very impressive.
Which, I mean, you know, that's kind of why we want diversity in the first place, is to get these different perspectives. That's what adds the richness of the fabric, is all of these different opinions and perspectives and backgrounds that makes us stronger at communication. So I think you bring up a good point. It's, you can't, if you're just looking at diversity, then you're not looking at the full spectrum. You're stopping short, and it's doomed, right? It's destined to failure. I mean, it could be why you get a lot of diversity coming into the department and then they don't make it all the way through.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm finding in the research that I'm doing is students will come into the university,
mm-hmm.
and then they have only one of two things usually happens, and this is probably an oversimplification, of course, but if you're not from the white middle and upper class sort of social norm, then you either come into the academic department and you adapt and you sort of make yourself part of that and you just figure out a way to make it work, or you leave because you can't adapt. So like one example I have is that I was interviewing a student, and she's part white and part Native American. So she looks white, or they say she presents as white. And she was in a computer lab late at night, and she was telling me about how there were a couple of students in there that made a racist joke about Native Americans. And she she was telling me this as kind of an afterthought. Like she just blew it off. She was like, it wasn't really a big deal, because I had asked her, well, were there any things that happened in your time in your degree program related to your race that, you know, were difficult or made it, you know, difficult to participate in the program. And at first she was like, no, not really. It was fine. Everything was fine. And she was like, I guess, you know, this one thing happened, but it wasn't really a big deal. But when she was telling me the story, I could tell it was kind of a big deal.
It was a big deal.
But she didn't say anything to them, and she didn't do anything because she was trying to just survive and graduate, you know. Mm-hmm. And some people survive and graduate, and some people drop out. But that shouldn't be just showing up to our programs and just surviving and getting through. Mm-hmm. You know, they should be coming in and thriving and being enriched and encouraged so that when they come out to the field, you know, they've got ideas and they're excited and they want to contribute. And they're not that they're beat down and resigned to sitting at a desk and doing just what they're
doing. Let me just survive the job. Let me just survive here. Let me just get my paycheck, you know. So then how can we be better? How can we be better? Because, you know, you work hard, you want to include people, you want to get a diverse group, you recruit a diverse group. How can you be better to make sure that they're at the end when you're like interviewing at the, like in the commercial world, we have this thing called an exit interview, right? You have those in academia where you're doing their, you know, they're finishing and they're leaving. So you want their thoughts. Then you start peppering them with questions. Did anything go wrong? Like maybe we could do that earlier. I don't know.
You could. One of the hardest things that I'm finding, though, is that when you talk to somebody and you say, hey, do your program directors, do they support diversity? They'll always be like, yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. How are we doing with inclusion? You know, is everything good? Yeah, everything's good. So I get some people who say, oh yeah, there's a problem and this was the problem. But the majority of students that I interview will say, nah, there was no problems or issues. So,
right.
But so I think what we have to do, and we're still learning about this, of course, and nobody's perfect at this. And I haven't seen a perfect formula, but it's really important to be very intentional about it and to say, we're going to be intentional about being inclusive. Like instead of being reactionary and kind of saying, asking people, you know, were there any problems? And then trying to fix them afterwards, trying to be proactive about it. So
right, like, rather than reactive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I think in some respects, if you're like asking, so did anybody do anything wrong? You're putting that person on the spot. And that's not fair. And of course, if I'm in that situation, so does anybody do anything wrong? Oh, no. And there could have been a lot of people doing things wrong, but I'm just going to say no because I don't want to hassle with it. So I don't think like asking that kind of question is going to be really productive for people. So I kind of like your perspective of saying, you know, we kind of have to live inclusive, right? Is kind of what you're saying. We have to be always aware of that and change our habits and behaviors.
Yeah, exactly. And then like we were talking about earlier, including people in everything that we do, different voices and perspectives in our decision-making processes. But the hardest part about that is that you have to somehow prove and show that you believe that their ideas are valuable. Because a lot of times people that have been marginalized have grown up and come their whole lives, you know, feeling and learning that their ideas aren't going to be taken seriously. So they're going to be quiet. They're not going to say anything, or they're going to try and say something that conforms to the cultural norm, whatever that is.
Well, and you can't make them responsible for representing that whole cultural perspective either.
Right.
Yeah.
True. But I think part of the comment about being marginalized is because you probably had a life of experience of saying something and nobody takes you seriously anyway. So it's like, all right. I'm just a token representation and they're not going to listen to any ideas that I have. Yeah. So I think you have to be genuine. If you really want diversity and you really want inclusion, you have to be genuine about it.
Yeah, that's so hard to show, hey, I'm genuine and I take your ideas seriously. Liz has a great point though, because one of the things that we see in higher ed is we'll try and hire for diverse faculty, right? Mm-hmm. But then we'll hire the one Black person in the faculty, and then that person all of a sudden becomes the advisor for every person of color. And they become the person of color representative on every committee, you know, and they get burnt out and asked to do more work than other people. And they become, then their opinion becomes, like Liz was saying, the representative for the whole the whole race or every person of color. Mm-hmm. And it's complicated, you know, it's complicated and messy and hard, but like you were saying, we have to, when someone brings up an idea or something that's outside of the norm, it's so important to take that seriously and to try and just not be dismissive, I think.
Mm-hmm. So how do we do it is you do it.
Yeah. Yes. How you do it is you do it. Exactly. Yeah. 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 And then as you start taking ideas seriously and doing things, I mean, sometimes it won't be good and sometimes it will be good, but as you take their ideas seriously, people are going to feel more free to express ideas. And then you're going to create a culture and attract people to you. It always happens, you know, you get your employees or your students by word of mouth a lot. And someone will say, hey, you know where a great place to work is? This place. You know, they always listen to me and they take me seriously and I love it here. And then you're going to start meeting your diversity goals that way.
And you bring up a really good point. And I was thinking about this morning as I was waking up, because I knew we were going to have this conversation today. So one of the things, and I'm just going to toot her horn, but it's true. Liz likes to include people that she doesn't know. Who do I not know? Because I think a lot of times, like, you know, in our social circles and in our expanse, we tend to fill it with people that we know, right? And if we're looking to tap people for help on things, so if we're like involved in a nonprofit, we'll like tap people that we know. But Liz has a habit of asking people who've been responsive, who do I not know? Who do you know that you think I should invite? Right? Because then what happens is all of a sudden you've got this diverse group of people with this whole symphony of voices that you would not have been exposed to.
Yeah.
Right? Partly for me, honestly, it's not all completely altruistic, but part of that is to reduce the workload, right? When people ask you, hey, will you be on this committee? Hey, will you do this? Hey, will you do that? We can't all do it all. Yes, it's prestigious to be asked, but really, when you've been asked to sit on one, you should say, hey, I can't, but let me find you someone who you don't know, who I can bring into the circle. Like, that's part of all of our responsibility, to bring someone else in rather than either being on everything or being the recruiter only asking our friends.
Yeah, I think that's so smart. And, you know, when I talk to people about doing things like this, sometimes it's people bring up like that it's easier to just bring in the people that we've always used or talked to, or sometimes even it's easier to bring in people that are already, they'll say like something like already understand the culture, right?
Code word right there.
and maybe in the short term, like it is a little bit easier, but it's a short term gain for a long term loss, in my opinion. If you can bring in a diverse group of people and people that you don't know, then in the end, you're going to come out with a better product, I think.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's a
I like that, short term gain for a long term loss.
Yeah.
I like that. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I think if we got to think about it like that, because it's going to be difficult on the front end, but in the end, it's going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally worth it. I mean, yeah. It brings something you said way early on. We talked about it as objective technical writing, right? And I'm not sure that really exists, or if objective isn't a code word for something specific.
Whoa, that's such a good, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, objective is a code word for something. Yeah, that is so true. I'm going to write that down, actually.
Supposed to be the other way around here. I'm supposed to be writing stuff down.
No, no, we're always learning. Yeah. Yeah, that's so cool. That's such a cool idea. Yeah, yeah. And there is no, I mean, you probably all understand this, but there's not no objective writing, really. I mean, even if we're trying our hardest to be objective, we're still sending some sort of rhetorical message in our writing. So whether
if this is a strength of technical communicators, right? We put ourselves in other people's shoes all the time, right? Half the things I appreciate and do work for are things that are absolutely of no interest to me personally. Like it's not my bag. I don't care about that, but I will support someone else's interest in learning that. Like, for example, and I know everyone's going to hate me for this, is API docs. I've written API docs. I do not see a future for myself writing API docs, but I know it's a hot topic here in the Valley. And as a Silicon Valley STC chapter, we do a lot focused on that as a subject matter, right? So we're always putting ourselves in the feet of other people, our customer, and we're drawing up who that person is. So there's not really an objective, because who is that person? Janice wrote, say, let's make up some people and like, what do they look like? And find a picture and figure out some hobbies for them, which is really hard for me, but you know, it's a good exercise and it makes our product literature better.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. See, yeah, that's brilliant. I think that's just amazing. Not a lot of people think that way, you know, so many people only think in terms of, I don't want to make other people sound terrible, but so many people think in terms of only themselves, only viewing things through their own personal lens. And this idea that technical communicators have to view the world from another person's lens is just so, so fascinating to me.
Yeah. And I think it's a good exercise because it does get you outside of yourself, and it can help you put a face to it, right? Or faces to it, because oftentimes you're going to have faces, and it helps you to think about things from somebody else's perspective. Because otherwise you get trapped. And somebody was asking, well, how do we think diversity? And I think that's one way that you start to think diversity, is viewing things from another lens, and you're going to be imperfect.
Yeah.
And you have to accept that you're imperfect at it. But I think the effort alone is going to change you and how you relate and interact.
Yeah, and that seems to be the hardest part, is, you know, you have to be intentional about it.
Yes.
So at first it's not part of your, what you do normally.
No.
It's about diversity and inclusion. But as you do it more and more, it starts to become one of your first thoughts. Like, okay, how is this inclusive or not inclusive?
Right. And I'd love to have somebody in psychology come here to Room 42 and talk about how we think, because it's normal and natural for us not to think about diversity. It's normal and natural for us to think in terms of like me, and it's primal.
Yeah, right? It's true.
But we have to rise above it, and we can rise above it. But that, so, I mean, I don't think anybody should beat themselves up over it, right? You shouldn't beat yourself up over it. And it does take intention thought, and it takes breaking that primal drive, right?
Yeah. Yes. The whole idea of humans as being tribal, tribalistic, like we're thinking.
But that's survival.
Yes.
It was. When you think in primitive terms, it was. It's not now. So we have to consciously change our way of doing things. So, yeah. And I think that's one of the key things too, is don't be ashamed of the fact that you don't naturally think in diverse terms.
Yeah.
That's kind of like admitting and saying, okay, well, you recognize that. That's more elevated to me than somebody who thinks, oh, I'm diverse, and you look around and they're not.
Well, and you'll get it wrong, and it's okay, because you learn from the experience. You'll get it right the next time. You apologize and do it right the next time.
Yeah, one of the hardest things for me has been and still is realizing my implicit biases and the racism that is in me. You know, the whole time growing up, we learn racism is bad. And so you always say, oh, I'm not racist. But you know, in some sense I am. Like, I have these biases that I have to think about and push against all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's hard, really hard to escape growing up in this is, I don't want to get too political. It's hard to escape growing up in society, you know, these like I am, you know, sexism and racism and things like that. It just kind of gets in you. So I was kind of programmed to believe certain things and stereotypes and all of that. So recognizing that and constantly like thinking about, okay, where are my biases? I think that's another thing technical communicators can do really well. Like, it's in the same vein of what we were talking about, but thinking about where am I biased in the way that I'm communicating and how do I sort of change that?
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's the first step to kind of make that walk towards inclusion and diversity, is just recognizing I don't have the answer. I can see where I'm like closed off. So how do I open up? And just recognizing that and constantly striving for that and suppressing all of the old habits or the old conditioning, right? And breaking out of that. That's a lifelong thing, and that's not a bad thing. So, sorry.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we are right on the hour time.
Are we really?
We are, like, it just zoomed past.
This has been a great conversation. I think, and really honestly, Chris, I think more conversations like this, don't you?
Oh yeah, we have to. The more we talk about it, the more it's going to help us to think about it all the time.
And the more it becomes commonplace.
Yeah.
Right. And the more, because I think sometimes some people, if they were, you know, if they were raised in white privilege, it's hard for them to, you know, be humble and like, it's a little bit of a shame thing.
Yeah.
But if we're all having more conversations and we're breaking down those barriers too, and we're making it okay to have conversations about diversity.
That's such a good point, because it is, because when you have that privilege, that white privilege you grow up with, when people push against it, it feels like a personal insult. Like you're personally, you feel like you have to defend yourself. But the more conversations we can have, the more you can realize, oh, it's okay. And other people also think this and see this and realize this. Yeah.
Right.
So cool. I like that idea.
And I like your point about you don't stop at just diversity.
Yeah.
That's your entry. That's your gateway. Then you have to take that next step and talk about inclusion.
Yeah. It's absolutely imperative.
Because inclusion means that's how you change and morph and adapt your everyday, to make sure you're including and not excluding people. Like if you recruit them into your company and they're working with you, you know, be inclusive and not exclusive. And don't put on the person who's representing whatever their cultural background, Black, brown, whatever. Don't put it on them to represent everybody in that, with that demographic, right? That's a person, not a whole representation of the entire demographic.
One of the SDC folks I know, Yvonne Wade Sanchez, she says, if you include people, diversity will happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they'll feel safe.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing, is they feel safe. I mean, if you feel like you're the only one and isolated and everybody's pounding on you to be the representative, you're not going to feel so safe.
Yeah.
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 But if you come at it from that nice, soft, subtle, inclusive, how can I make you feel comfortable? You know, I'm not putting ownership on you to correct me. I'm going to be more aware. I'm going to be more conscious. Then people feel like, wow, this is great. I'm included. I'm listened to, you know, being heard and implementing ideas and suggestions.
Well, I feel energized. I hope the audience does too.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris, for providing this opportunity.
This has been wonderful. I'm so glad you came.
Oh, thank you. What a privilege to talk to you. I really appreciate you inviting me. It's so great.